communication of information by, in, to, or through this show, and your receipt or use of it, one, is not provided in the course of and does not create or constitute an attorney-client relationship. Two, is not intended as a solicitation. Three, is not intended to convey or constitute legal advice. And four, is not a substitute for obtaining legal advice from a qualified attorney. You should not act upon any such information without first seeking qualified professional counsel on your specific matter. The hiring of an attorney is an important decision that should not be based solely upon show communication.
WKCS Falcon Radio now presents In Session, a presentation of the Public Affairs Department of WKCS. This program provides educational information about different areas of law and features Knoxville lawyer and Fulton graduate Jed McKean. If you have any questions about today's show, they can be emailed to wkcs@knoxschools.org or insessionradio@gmail.com. Now, let's go in session.
Welcome to another week of In Session, where we will be talking about driving under the influence. I'm Lucas Hill, here with Tito Menefee and Jed McKean. To start off with, so what does driving under the influence actually mean?
All right, so driving under the influence, or DUI as most people call it, is the most common crime in the state of Tennessee and probably all of the U.S. That's the crime that people get arrested on more than any other. Driving under the influence doesn't just mean that you are driving. It actually means whether you are you in control of a vehicle while you are under the influence of alcohol or drugs.
So what does under the influence mean?
Okay. So I did a little prelude to that right there. Influence of alcohol or drugs. But let's get specific with that answer there. So when you are operating a vehicle, the state of Tennessee wants you to be able to operate that vehicle in an appropriate manner and one where you're not a danger to others. The state of Tennessee sees driving a vehicle as a privilege, not a right. And since it's a privilege, they are much more willing to take it away from you. If you are under the influence of alcohol or drugs, that means that you have consumed either alcohol or drugs to such an extent that you are incapable of operating a vehicle safely. And people forget about drugs a lot as part of that DUI phrase. They think only about drinking alcohol. And lots of people get prescribed medications all the time, and they don't realize that taking those medications may impair their ability to operate a vehicle safely.
So what normally happens if you get arrested for DUI?
Okay. Well, the first thing that will happen is that someone decides to consume alcohol. And we're going to focus today primarily on consuming alcohol. Now, we all know what alcohol is. Beer, liquor, wine, champagne, alcoholic beverages that you have to be over 21 to consume, okay? So if you are driving under the influence, you have probably consumed some amount of alcohol, okay? And I will tell you that in my experience, in representing people on DUIs for a number of years, if you consume more than one alcoholic beverage, then you are your driving is probably impaired to such a degree that you are guilty of driving under the influence, which is a scary thing because having more than one doesn't sound like that many. Well, I only had two drinks. That doesn't sound like that many. Well, I will tell you that I have represented a number of people who have only had two drinks, and they have been considered driving under the influence.
How does two drinks or more make me under the influence?
Okay, well, that's an excellent question based on what I just said. So in Tennessee, they determine whether you are under the influence based on your blood alcohol content level, or your BAC. So in Tennessee, if your BAC is 0.08 or above, then you are under the influence. Now, that doesn't sound like very much because it's not. That means that 0.08% of your blood is made up of alcohol at that point. Now, I've seen as high as 0.3. That means 0.3% of someone's blood 0.3% of someone's blood is made up of alcohol, but 0.08 is over the legal limit. Now, this used to be 0.1, but they have lowered that, and that's why it's so easy to be considered driving under the influence. If you have two beers, especially if you're a small person, like a girl who's only 130, 150 pounds, they are typically going to have their blood alcohol level go up higher just because they're smaller. Now, if it's a bigger person, then it may take them three, but generally two will get you to right around 0.08. But if they test your blood and it is below 0.08, then you are not considered to be under the influence while you are driving.
So how does a cop know that I'm driving under the influence?
Well, they probably don't know to start out, okay? And what they are looking for is when a cop pulls you over, if you get pulled over in the middle of the day, you're going to get pulled over for a speeding ticket or running a stop sign or not having your brake lights work. The cops will use these opportunities to talk to you and see if you are driving under the influence. Now, if it's in the middle of the day, they may not... people are less drunk in the middle of the day unless it's a UT football game day, and then people are drunk all day long. But what they will do is they will use these traffic stops to question you and to determine whether you are under the influence.
Are the cops out hunting for people to arrest for DUI?
Yes. The short answer to that is yes, and particularly at night. I have done, it's open to the public. You can do a ride along with the Knoxville Police Department where you can ride along with one of their officers for free while they're out doing their jobs. And I have done that before. And he said, look, anytime that someone drives by without their headlights on, I will pull them over, and 9 times out of 10, they are drunk. They are driving under the influence, okay? Because most people consume alcohol at night, cops are more on alert for this kind of crime at night as opposed to during the day.
So how do the cops know if someone is driving under the influence?
Well, they will have a suspicion right off the bat, okay? They have seen a car break some sort of traffic violation, which happens all the time. It can be something as simple as crossing the middle line one time. Okay, so say you're looking down at your phone, you're texting, driving, you'll cross the middle line. Well, that's enough for a cop to pull you over. And then once they have pulled you over, they are going to start questioning you. Hey, where have you been? Did you have anything to drink? And these are all questions that they will ask you. They will see if you have bloodshot eyes. They will see if the inside of the car smells like alcohol. They will see if you have any problems pulling the car over. If you have any problems turning the car off, these are indicators that they will look for to see if you are driving under the influence, okay? Now, I'm going to jump ahead here a little bit, but what I tell people typically, and this is tough to do, is be polite to the officers, but don't answer any questions. Unless you're not drunk, then you're like, look, I'm not scared of getting a DUI because I haven't been drinking. But if you've even had one, answering these questions don't really help you. Now, the cop will then at some point say, hey, why don't you get out of the car? They will check to see if you're stumbling, if you have any trouble taking off your seatbelt, if you have to rest your hand on the car to steady yourself. It's just one of those things where they are looking for everything they can do to say, hey, this person might be driving under the influence.
What field sobriety test would they ask me to do?
So first thing, when you get out of the car, the cop will say, hey, do you want to do some field sobriety test for me? And most people say yes. I tell people all the time, if you have had one drink, don't do any test. Because I have seen people sober in the middle of the day. I bet if all three of us, if Lucas and Tito and myself got up and did the normal field sobriety test, one or two of us would fail these tests because they're hard to do even when you haven't had anything to drink. So what I tell people, they will ask you to do these tests, and I tell people there's no reason to do them. It doesn't help you to do them unless you're actually sober. And then you'll end up failing them, and that'll help them build their case to convict you. So what are some of the tests that they will have you do? Well, one of the most common is one-legged stand. They will make you stand on one foot and hold your other foot about a foot off the ground with your hands by your side and count to 30, which is very difficult to do even when you're sober. I bet if one or both of you got up there and do it, it would be tough to do. Another one they do a lot is they walk and turn test. They make you walk heel to toe, 9 steps forward, turn around, and walk 9 steps back on a line or imaginary line with your hands by your side. These are the most common tests, the ones that they have been approved. Now, they may ask you to do part of your ABCs or touch your fingers and count them like 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. But those, the one-legged stand and the walk and turn, are the two most common ones, okay? Again, I tell you, if you are brave enough, and it's hard to say no to a cop. You're taught to do what cops tell you your whole life, and it's hard to say no. But if you say, hey, I politely decline to do any of these tests, that's what I would recommend that you do.
After all the tests have been completed, what happens next?
Okay, so you've done these tests or you haven't done them. Now, in all honesty, unless you are actually sober, they will probably arrest you, okay? That's just what's going to happen. Now, it's not the end of the world, but it's obviously no fun. They may ask you to do a breathalyzer, okay? Again, no reason to do a breathalyzer unless you have had absolutely zero to drink, no drinks at all. And if you haven't had anything to drink, say, hey, I don't want to do any tests. Just bring me a breathalyzer or I'll do a blood test because I haven't had anything to drink. So that's what I would tell you to do. Refuse the breathalyzer. They don't often ask you to do the breathalyzer, but they may ask you to do that. Then at some point, they will put you under arrest. They will put handcuffs on you and they will put you in the back of the cruiser if they think you have been driving under the influence. Okay?
Will anything else happen?
Okay. Will anything else happen? After you have been arrested and you're in the back of the car, every single person who's charged with DUI has to submit to a blood test, and they will take you to the hospital to do that before they take you to jail if you agree to do one. So what they will do is they'll read you this form. It's called the implied consent form. That means that if you're driving a vehicle, if you have a license in the state of Tennessee and you're charged with DUI, you are agreeing that you will give blood if you're charged with DUI. But you can refuse to take the test. Again, refuse to give the blood unless you're actually sober. There's no reason for you to give blood. Particularly the breathalyzer and giving blood, these will, without a doubt, if you have been drinking, they will show that you're drunk, and then you'll just be convicted. Now, you will be charged with violating the implied consent law if you do not give blood. But it's much better to make it hard for the DAs to convict you. And when I say DAs, I mean district attorneys, the people prosecuting your charge. It's going to be much harder for them to convict you of DUI if you didn't do a test, if you didn't give a breathalyzer, and if you didn't do blood.
If I don't agree to do anything and decline everything, will they arrest me?
Probably. They will probably arrest you, okay? Now, what I would tell you is if you get arrested, that's okay. We can talk about what happens after that, but you don't want to. It's one thing to get arrested. Again, even if you're arrested, you're still innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. But if you are doing these other things, doing the test and failing them, giving the blood, and it comes back that you're drunk, then you're making their case to convict you of DUI.
It is now time to take a short break. We will be back with more In Session.
91.1 FM.
Texting and driving is very dangerous, and it can lead to hazardous effects. According to the National Safety Council, approximately 600,000 people attempt to use their phones while behind the wheel. Cell phone use while driving has led to 1.6 million crashes each year. Nearly 330,000 injuries are caused by people texting while they are driving. An estimated 9 people die texting and driving every day. It is important to stay cautious and aware of your surroundings. That text can wait. It can be the matter of life and death for those on the road. This has been a public service message from WKCS Radio.
From Fulton High School, this is your home for the classics, WKCS Knoxville.
We are back with In Session. We are talking more about the driving under the influence.
Well, how many DUIs do you need before you finally get your license suspended?
Okay, great question. Now, if you get convicted of one DUI, you will lose your license for a year on the very first one. So let's talk about the punishments. If you get convicted of a DUI first, you will spend a minimum of 48 hours in jail, okay? And you can spend up to a year, but it's usually 2 to 10 days. Then you will be on probation for a year. You'll have to pay a $350 fine. And probation is $40 a month, $40 to $50 a month. You have to do 48 hours of litter pickup. You also have to do a driving school class. So getting your very first DUI, not only do you get your license suspended for a year, but you got to do all this other stuff. Now, you can get a restricted license. You can get one of those ignition interlock where you blow into it to show that you're not drunk and it starts your car. Those are $90 a month, last I checked, okay? So there's ways to do that. Now, if you get convicted of a second DUI, that's a minimum, and they stay on there for 10 years. So after 10 years, it would be a DUI first again. But if you get convicted of a second one within 10 years, it's 45 days minimum in jail, okay? Which is a lot of time to do in jail for something that can be avoided. So, and the penalties only go up from there. I think it's 3 months and then 4 months, and it just goes further on up the more you get. And, you know, your license will stay suspended for a year, and then it gets suspended for even longer as you go along. There are people out there driving all the time without licenses, but it's never a good idea, okay? Because then you get pulled over for anything, and they'll either write you a ticket or sometimes you'll get arrested for driving on a suspended license, okay? Other questions?
On your first DUI, can it affect your workplace? Could they fire you because of that?
Yes, they absolutely can, and lots of places do, okay? Because Tennessee is in an at-will employment state, they can fire you for any reason and no reason. And keep in mind, DUI is not able to be expunged. You can never get those off your record. They are on there forever, okay? So DUI is a big deal. There are lots of ways to avoid it. First off is don't drive drunk or have somebody else drive. Or, you know, they have Uber and Lyft now that are so easy to use that are you know, just an app, a taxi app on your phone. It's just not worth it, because by the end of the day, they did some statistic about between attorney's fees and court costs and everything, what the average person spends if they get arrested for DUI, $15,000, okay? And that means you get convicted probably too. So what I would tell you is do everything you can, you know, to avoid getting charged with, just don't drive drunk if you can at all possible. And, you know, if you do get pulled over, here are some tips to remember, and essentially be very nice, but don't agree to do anything in the nicest way possible.
If you, if you're driving under the influence and you cause a wreck, is there any worse penalties?
Yes. Okay. Because they may charge you with some sort of, I've seen like, if you've hurt somebody, an aggravated assault or something like that, assault with a deadly weapon, reckless endangerment, and if you get involved in a wreck, it's a mandatory blood draw, so you don't even have a choice. You can't refuse to give blood. They will take your blood whether you agreed to do it or not. And probably your insurance is going to go through the roof if you still can get insurance. That's a good question.
So what if you get into, like, you hit somebody and it kills them if you go on a DUI?
It'll be a DUI and probably some sort of reckless manslaughter or something like that, too. I mean, you're in for a world of trouble. No kidding. And that's the scary stuff, is that not only could you get a DUI, which hurts you, but, you know, you could hurt somebody else. I had a girl who I represented a few years back, and she hit a guy on a motorcycle, took half his arm off, and she'd only had like 3 drinks, you know. It's just scary stuff, and she spent quite a bit of time in jail, and of course it changed that guy's life forever.
Thank you, Jed McKeon, for stopping by today. This has been another week of In Session with Lucas Hill, Tito Menifee, and Jed McKeon.
This has been In Session, a presentation of the Public Affairs Department of WKCS Radio. If you have any questions about today's show, that can be emailed to wkcs@notschools.org or insessionradio@gmail.com. Tune in again next time on WKCS for more In Session.